Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Bill Cameron will be with us shortly. Dan Peck here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Jason Caldwell from, I still want to say it's from inside the Auburn Tigers, Jason.
It'll always be a part of that.
I know.
But you're
rocking the 24/7 now, right?
Yep. Auburn Undercover.
Auburn Undercover, and doing a great job with everything going on. I would think that the portal windows are hot spots for you guys. You know, we'll see what happens with Auburn over the next couple of weeks with the men's basketball team. There are reports of a lot of different players that Auburn has reached out to in the basketball transfer portal. Like that's an interesting sort of it's a side story to the NCAA tournament.
That
really gets going the day the bracket is revealed.
Yeah, it's hard right now because the only thing you get is if somebody says, "Yeah, I've heard from them," and right now you would assume from Auburn that you're going to be in the market for almost one of everything at this point, and more than one of other. You know, like, you still don't know what happens. Hey, can you talk Jani Broom into staying? If you do, does Dylan Cardwell stay? Do you still need a big man to be ready for the next year? Obviously, you start talking about with KD gone. Now you're bringing in a shooting guard, a guy that can play point and shooting guard. Do you need another experienced guy to go with Denver Jones? I think so. Obviously, power forward. Power forward is probably the number one spot on this team. With Jalen Williams gone, you got Chaney Johnson there. You don't really have another one. And so you start going – Adrian Scott is a guy that they brought in last year, didn't really get to play. Do you have another one of those guys? You've got a wing coming in Ja'Kai Howard. You need another experienced guy like that, maybe a guy with a couple of years to kind of bridge the gap. Those are things – yeah, so you start going, okay, who fits the bill? And it's almost like, okay, who would be the best fits? And you go, well, there's a bunch of good fits because there's a bunch of guys that are going in there every minute almost.
And then, Jason, I wonder, I mean, if you can sell Ja'Nai, literally sell Ja'Nai on coming back, could he possibly play some four? And then you get a five. I mean, they're different. It's so many different ways you can fill this up.
Yeah, there are a lot of options for sure. And that's the thing is, it's safe to say that Auburn's going to be a player in the transfer portal market because they have to be.
Yeah, they better be.
Yeah, they have to be. And so I think that was the plan all along. It's not like this is a surprise. They knew this was what was going to happen. And you have to be more active in there. And they've been pretty active the last couple of years. You're going to have to be more active this year in terms of numbers than you've been. And so I think, you know, the good news is that you play people. The first thing I always go to is that somebody that Auburn has played. Those are the guys that you're most familiar with,
right?
The people that you've
scouted
them.
Yeah.
You know their games more, and maybe they know you a little bit more. We saw a couple of Virginia Tech guys in the portal. We've seen other guys. And so you start to look at some of those possibilities and then move forward to people. Maybe it's somebody that you know, coach with. Hey, Florida had a guard in that was a preseason All-SEC pick today, goes in the portal, averaged 9 points a game, but obviously a connection between Auburn and Florida with Todd Golden and Bruce Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a positive. That's the thing. It's just so much unknown.
But there's so much in the portal too.
Yeah, correct.
Like Bruce,
it is.
And Bruce
it is
Pearl has
flying.
Shown. Bruce Pearl has shown an ability. Bruce Pearl and his staff have shown an ability, unlike few other coaches in college football, in college basketball, to be able to identify what they need in the portal and go get those guys and make it. You know, they've had. You know, I mean, the batting average is pretty good. for Bruce Pearl as far as what he's needed to do
out
of the portal, and especially from the mid-major level. Look at what he's been able to go get, and look at how they've been able to fit in.
I was going to say, look at the players you're really counting on a lot next year. Denver, I mean, you know, you're talking about guys that Auburn just went and got last year.
Yeah, you look at Denver, Chad Baker Mazzara,
Denver,
Chaney,
Chad
Johnson.
And Chaney.
That's as it stands today.
That right now appears to be the nucleus of the team. You're hoping that Janai's back.
Correct.
But he's another guy that came from a mid-major.
Correct. Another mid-major. You don't know what Janai does. You don't know what Dylan Cardwell does. Both those guys could potentially come back. What happens at point guard? Do both Trey and Aiden come back? Does one guy move on? It kind of feels like, I think it's felt like for a long time that one of those guys might at least look. Don't know if that's going to happen or which one it would be. So that's the thing.
And if Auburn goes and gets a guard who would profile as a 30-plus a minute type of guard, you wonder if both of those guys.
Yeah, I don't know that that's even a possibility for Auburn. They don't want to do that. So that's the thing. But I do think if you start going, hey, we're looking at somebody and it looks like a point guard, then I think that would be a pretty good sign.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do wonder, you say Auburn doesn't want to do that. Bruce, this was the first time we'd ever seen Bruce really try two point guards playing like this. And I wonder if he wants a split at the point guard or if he wants someone who is 30.
I think ideally you would love to have a guy that hey, he is by far and away the best guy. You would love to have
it's similar to quarterback in how we talk about it.
Yeah, I think so.
If you're getting by with what you got and splitting time, like
here's the other part of it too, is you look at it and you go, for the regular season, depth is a huge factor. For the NCAA tournament, depth is not a huge factor.
Right.
You get more timeouts, there are longer timeouts. They play less players, more minutes when you get the NCAA tournament. Can you find a happy medium by going and finding a guy that say, look, we're going to find our 32-minute-a-game point guard? Or is there another guy that was one of those positions you feel like, hey, this guy can play all those minutes? And the hard part in this system is being able to do that while limiting fouls, because you're so aggressive defensively. That's kind of that catch 22.
Yeah, people focus on fatigue with the minutes, but a lot of it's keeping guys out of foul trouble too, because Auburn has defensive players that if they played 30, 35 minutes a game instead of 20 to 25, maybe they'd be in more pronounced foul trouble at the end of the game. That's a great point, Jason.
3-3-4, 3-2-1, 1390, just getting underway. Sorry I was a little late. When I talked with you pre-show, I was out at I was at Home Depot. I was gonna try to get around, but it's like whatever. I was at Home Depot, and I did not think about not coming down Glen. I should have come around
from Tigertown.
Yes, from Tigertown. Okay. I should not have done that because the traffic.
As I got right past the church of Highlands.
I
didn't even get there. It was backed up all the way, and I was stuck. I was in the right lane. I could not turn around.
Should you have kept going on Frederick and taken Opelika Road?
Yes,
all the way up.
Oh yes, that would have been much better. Or I'd have been better up going hitting 280 and coming around, hitting University and coming in.
I mean,
I didn't think about that, so apologize that I was a couple of minutes late. But a little tip of the cap. How about just a be more careful. It's my drive of the day. Haven't done this in a while. Really, really nice vehicle, too, that you're taking a chance doing something like this in your little Porsche. Once we finally were able to start turning on University, and the signs clearly say, you know, left lane closed ahead, and you get there to the left lane, a Porsche that decided to cut around and then go into the meet, then go into the ditch and cut back up to get one car length ahead. So I hope it was worth it.
I had a doctor.
But nearly got clipped in your nice vehicle. I hope it's probably mom and daddy bought it for you.
I don't drive slowly, but I consider myself to be a safe driver. You've ridden with me in situations where to me, it was explained to me one time, driving recklessly at a high speed is one of the worst things people do as far as a risk reward. Like, you're saving 10 seconds, 15 seconds off of a commute.
He moved up one car. Actually, it ended up two car lengths because it was me and the car ahead.
And he, she.
I couldn't tell who was driving.
Jason, I know you've seen some horrendous driving in your days. Like, I mean, what you're risking versus what you stand to gain, right?
Correct. It's always a frustrating thing when you see somebody that flies past somebody to immediately turn in front of them in the next car.
I don't like that.
Yeah, that tests my patience, and my wife will say reckless, I don't have a bunch of that anyway.
Reckless driving around crosswalks gets me because I've been that person in the pedestrian before. You know, I've been in the pedestrian shoes.
We saw our boss get hit in the crosswalk years ago. Remember that?
Greg
got one in walking across from McDonald's. I mean, it's be careful.
A couple of years ago, I pulled somebody out of the way of a moving vehicle that probably would have taken him out in the in the crosswalk. I let them know.
I will do that too. If somebody's doing that, I definitely will let them know.
Hey, you know what? I remember that time I saved you.
Yeah. All right. We're just underway. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Beautiful day, man.
Amazing.
It is perfect. Gorgeous. Got out and started doing some things outside. I mean, early this morning. And it's been a great day. The pollen's not too bad. I guess that's because of the rain we had yesterday. But speaking of yesterday.
Give that a day or two. Right?
Yeah, I know. That'll give it a day or two more to bloom for the pollen to bloom and everything. But speaking of yesterday, a rain-delayed baseball game, Jason. But good to see the bats really come out in force last night. Didn't get off to a great start for Christian Herberholtz. Before I could make it over and before the rains delayed things for about 45 minutes, first two batters of the game, it's 2-0, Jack State. But then Auburn, was it four homers last night?
Four home runs last night, yeah.
End up run ruling.
Saw one of the, and I guess it's semantics for a baseball umpire, but just a brutally bad call in the first inning, the first batter of the game. Hit a roller to
I heard first, all the talk about that.
To first base, and – Cooper McMurray gets it, flips it to Herberholtz, who covers the bag and, you know, kind of kicks the bag a little bit, and they call him safe, and he immediately goes, hey, hands to the ears, meaning, hey, we got to review this. Well, when you see the review, you see a side angle, and you can't physically see his foot touch the bag.
Right. I heard. See, I was on the way to the house to pick up Kathy, so I'm listening to Andy and Paul.
And you see the bag move. Like, it moves enough to kind of kick some dirt out of the way. Well, it doesn't do that unless somebody touches it, and he's the only one around. Well, then the front angle, the runner blocks him, and you can't see him physically touch the bag, but you see the bag move sideways, and they go, the call stands. Well, the bag didn't move on its own. And so it's things like that you can use common sense to go, oh, I didn't physically see him move the bag. Well, it didn't move on its own, so it had to move somewhere. But four home runs for them, a couple of big innings, had a big inning
That's
against
good.
Arkansas.
That's good. Back-to-back games with big innings.
And it's going to take some big innings because Texas A&M is really good. It's another really good baseball team that you're going to face, a couple of really strong lefties in the starting rotation for the Aggies. Jace Lavalette may be as physical as anybody other than Jack Caglin on in the country, and he may be more physical as a hitter. This is a challenging weekend once again for this team. I mean,
there's a real chance that one of the four teams Auburn sees to begin conference play is your eventual national champion.
Yeah.
Like you may face
a quarter of the College World Series
field
in your first 4 weeks in this league. And now – I think they all have holes. Obviously, Vandy went on the road last week and got swept by South Carolina. I don't think Arkansas is great offensively, but they'll go home this weekend. They play LSU. LSU, defending national champ, went out and got two transfer starting pitchers, another really good roster, and they're 2-4. And they got to go to Arkansas at 2-4 this weekend. It just tells you how good this league is. Auburn is 1-5. And there are only three teams that they're not within two games
of. Number 18 team in the country in the human polls when conference play started, right? A team good enough to be.
Yeah, and right now, one of only two SEC teams that's not ranked.
Yeah, LSU's 2-4 still in the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it just, you know, it shows you one thing about polls too. It's, you know, and but yeah, it's just this league. It is, when you think about this league, especially in my opinion, especially in baseball and softball, you know, you think about going, oh man, football is obviously a brute. Basketball has gotten much better. But there are games when you're at the top of your game in football and basketball, you go, we feel pretty good about this one. There's not a place right now other than Missouri in baseball where you go, okay, we can take a deep breath this weekend. You don't have one of those. And that just that's a hard road to hoe when you start talking about, you know, dealing with that. And that's what baseball have this weekend again.
That's life in the conference pretty much every year now. That's the way they've done. And it's the way you think about how men's basketball changed in the SEC from the late aughts, early 2010s to...
Yeah, I was going to say in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah,
for
I
sure.
mean, you think about the way programs have upgraded, who their coaches and what they can...
And I think this is a baseball league that I think is going to mirror what we saw in the Big 12 in basketball, where you go, there. I don't know. Now, Houston had that kind of run. My guess is that there may be 8 or 9, maybe 10 teams in this league this year that are between 17 and 13 and 13 and 17 by the time the dust settles. I think there's going to be a bunch of teams that all beat up on each other.
Could that all get you in? I mean,
I think with the strength of this league, depending on how it goes and who you beat, I think a 13-17 might get you in. Even though there's John Cohen rolls off the select committee, I don't know that there's an SEC voice on the selection committee this year.
No, that's crazy.
Which could have an impact.
All right, we will get to our first break. Love for you to join in. You can do so by giving us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Come on in and join us. We're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 21 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, Drew at the controls, and we will get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I was just going to say I enjoyed listening to the baseball broadcast last night with Paul Ellen and John Cohen on the call in the later innings. Of course, yeah. He has a wealth of experience and a unique insight.
You know,
that's the reason why you want to be an AD, is so you can tell the guys in the booth to take a hike and you just call the game.
You
want in any sport.
I was saying last night, there's no question. John loves the game, I don't think he wants to just sit by himself in the AD's booth and talk. He'd much rather enjoy going in and talking along on the radio, and he's very good.
Yeah, he does good.
So it's great. Yeah, he comes in, and you've always got like an extra color guy there.
And he also fired off a comment that nothing good comes out of Tuscaloosa about one of the pitchers that were coming in for Jack's.
I didn't hear that.
So he was he said he can do that because he's from there.
He's from there. That's true. Right.
But I was going to get y'all's comment and also about Mickey Dean. Y'all got any surefire kink miss applicants to fill his void when he leaves?
No, I mean there's going to be I think a big group of applicants.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be a shortage of applicants.
No, and you know, you start to go, which direction do you go? Do you go assistant coach who's been part of a program? And we were talking about earlier, how connections, there's always something that you start looking at going, are there connections? And I think an interesting is Taryn Mowat. She was a pitcher at Arizona. She's been at Mississippi State for five or six years as an assistant. She was at Ole Miss before that. She has a history of getting the College World Series, and she was a pitcher. So I think that's an interesting. Patty Gasso's son, at Oklahoma's head coach, is an assistant now at Arkansas, hitting coach, but was at Utah, a place that had not been very good before that. And offensive
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's Auburn, what he does.
It'd be great to see the scoreboard light up again.
And you know, normally, you know, Mickey Dean is a pitching,
yes,
pitching first. I wouldn't be shocked to say, oh, well, let's go a little more offensive. It's worked at Arkansas. It's worked at Missouri.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about the impact Texas and Oklahoma make in different sports.
Softball, it's through the roof.
Yeah.
We have not seen anything in softball. You're bringing in maybe the two best programs in the country. One of them for sure.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's the best.
I mean, a lot of teams in the SEC can start making 15 and 20 year plans for softball because the immediate future
is tough.
Maybe belongs to Oklahoma.
So I think you know, you start looking at programs being successful, maybe assistants with strong recruiting ties, and maybe offense. To me, that's kind of maybe the starting point.
I don't understand how we've got great pitching, but we've had zero offense. I don't see how they can't both be. You know, I don't understand how come they can't both coexist on the same. Same team. I mean, because you only got so many pitchers, and everybody else needs to be concentrating on getting on base and coming around and scoring.
Yeah, the problem is you're recruiting against other schools, and there's a limited amount of players that fit that bill. When you start talking about recruiting elite offensive talent, and that's what it takes. Can you develop it and can you get better? Yes, but it's kind of like that old situation. I said, you know, getting back to me there, you're talking about, you know, developing guys. I said, look, you could have trained me to block Reggie White every day of my life, and I couldn't have done it. The same thing holds true. There's a lot of people that are born hitters, and you can train them and guide them, but if they can hit, they can hit. And that's where that recruiting part, building those relationships, comes in, focusing more on that.
Development matters, but there's a select few number of players that can hit.
Like a Casey Cooper,
yeah, hand-eye coordination,
and it's a battle to get them, and increasingly, I thought JG made a really interesting point in his write-up about Mickey Dean stepping down, which was, it's not just in softball, you can pick any sport, where guys who were excellent developers maybe find their skills not as, it's not as important as it used to be because talent acquisition.
Correct.
Because of the portal. Yes.
It's the most important thing.
We know we had a pretty good player leave last year, Bree Ellis, and so I would be doing some exit interviews with these players as to why they left, because Auburn should be able to recruit itself. I don't care what position you're playing.
Auburn can recruit itself, but as Dan just said, there's other factors involved now. And can you pay as much as another school is going to pay somebody from an NIL perspective, and can Auburn softball become that attractive to? Because that's it. I mean, that's a big part of this. Now you start going, hey, okay, I've got options. Arkansas, I can guarantee you, has NIL for softball and other sports.
A lot of the
can you match those things?
A lot of the things that have helped Auburn in other sports can hurt Auburn when they're up against a superpower in a sport where maybe Auburn isn't at a national championship. I mean,
look at LSU women's basketball. They've already added Arkansas's top scorer, and they ain't even done with their season this year. Those are things that factor in, and that's part of what Auburn softball is dealing with too.
It'd be interesting if this NIL has ever becomes transparent, you know, as far as like state employees, so you can actually see what people are getting paid at different schools to come play. So, but I appreciate y'all's time. Thank you.
Hey, John, thanks for the call. No, I mean, that's some good points and questions raised.
I don't know that it'll ever be transparent unless it becomes in-house.
Yeah. Well, if they become employees,
that's what I'm saying.
Then
it's going to become, okay, this person makes this much because that's it. I don't know.
Although there are still some things, even though you can see the contracts or the salaries, there's things in addition to salaries with coaches. You can look right now. You can look up the coaches' salaries, but that is not everything that they're getting.
No, and there's still going to be an opportunity where somebody go, well, I'm going to do this on my own because they've opened up that door for somebody.
Yeah,
to go.
You can't say that they can't go get other endorsements
because that's what everybody does.
Absolutely.
You know, Major League Baseball players don't only make their salary.
Now, employment would sort of impact how endorsements, you know, what the university's role is. And I mean, because state employees are different than professional athletes. If you're talking about like
they are, but they may end up being special employees and not regular state employees.
I keep wondering if employment at the conference level would solve this in some way where you know, players are to play for
golly,
school,
it makes it almost feel like the conference then would be determining where the players go.
Correct.
And I don't want anything like that. I don't want the conference encouraging, well, we're a little short over here. This school's a little short. You go over there or anything like that.
I just think, I mean, you'd commit to the school and then you'd be an employee of the conference at the school you're at. Like, that's sort of where I think, like, if the schools want the appetite, you know, the conferences have the media rights deals anyway, so it feels like you got, I don't know.
Well, you're getting the money from them anyway. Yeah. So, you know, the interesting thing is that how does – you know, because here's the thing. There's avenues, there's opportunities for NIL, those things. I think people that, there's some national guys that I think are so out of touch in this. They were tweeting about the other day about, you know, this coach or the conference making all this money and these guys get cost of attendance. And I heard Greg Byrne talk about this the other day because I've been wondering what Auburn's number was.
Did you see the list that was posted?
Greg Byrne.
Uh-huh.
I saw him talking about it a little bit. He said they figured out that the student athlete at Alabama roughly is $190,000 a year. That's what the cost is, because that's a pretty good deal, especially when you get, as we were talking about the other day, on the flip side of that, you're getting a couple of $1,000 or more on top of your bills. And I'm like, I'd like to have a couple of $1,000 every month.
Yeah,
on
not
top of
not
my
have
bills.
To worry about paying any rent, well, mortgage,
correct?
Do you because we talked about this a little.
Utilities.
I know we're up against a break, but this is interesting. I don't want to punt it to after the commercial break, because we talked about this a little bit on campus last week. There are people in the college athletics industry or adjacent to it, or people who just left. Nick Saban, Scott Van Pelt, you know, the guys who went up to Washington, D.C. to talk about NIL, who relay stories like, the first question a recruit has is about money now. Like, that's routinely. Nick Saban told the story about not wanting to have, Bill? The Sunday brunches weren't as special because it was all.
He would have players over to his house. And he said his wife, Miss Terry, said, why are we doing this?
Is that how much of that do you feel like is fear mongering to try to
a
get?
A lot of it.
And how much of it do you feel like is based in reality?
I think a lot of it is.
Okay.
Does it happen? Yes. Do I think it's the only thing that happens? No. We talk to these kids all the time. Do I think NIL is important to some of them? Yes. Do I think it's, hey, that's the only thing that matters? 100%. That's not the case. There's a lot of guys that have, hey, I'll deal with that later, once I find my school. So I think it's does something need to change? Yes. Was this totally about, well, that's all it became? I don't think so. I personally think it became, you know what? I'm not getting all my guys. All of a sudden, we don't get everybody that we're going after, and other people are getting them, and I don't like that.
And the portal had as much to do with that as NIL.
I think had a lot to do with it. NIL had a lot to do with it.
Adjusting the eligibility rules.
There were lots of schools that had NIL long before NIL became the way it is now.
Right.
And that didn't work out as well. And so I think it's completely different. And Nick Saban adapted better than any coach I can remember in any sport. I thought he did a great job of that. I don't think he wanted to adapt to this one, because what did we get back to originally? What's the most important thing? Talent acquisition. You're not going to acquire as much talent now as you did 10 years ago. Just not going to happen.
That's Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here along with Bill and Dan as we get to our bottom of the hour break, halfway done with hour number one. Come on in and join us at 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 24 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Jason, it seems like, I guess, with Auburn men's and women's basketball eliminated, it seems like, well, there's not that much going on, but there is. I mean, we talked a little baseball. I mean, softball's going on. We're wondering, you know, who will be the replacement for Mickey Dean. Football, of course, there next to the last week, yep. Sort of coming down the stretch here in football as they will wind things up next Saturday with A-Day.
Yeah, it's been a really good few weeks. We've had a lot of access in terms of interviews. We've talked to a bunch of folks. We didn't get as much practice time yesterday. We got a couple of hours last week, but we got to see them, you know, do some things. And this is what I've said. I wrote it the other day, a little insider piece at Auburn Undercover. But you talk to former players, high school coaches. Those are the two guys when I say two groups, when I say people that come to practice. They're not there every day. They normally don't. Now, they'll follow recruiting, but they're normally – and so what's your impression? And almost to a person, it's been, that looks different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of the looks different is young, and they're going to play. I think we will see more young guys play on this team than we've seen in a long time at Auburn, out of necessity. But those are, to me, the most talented parts of this team. The interesting thing is that people talking about the secondary group, you just lost – three guys. Zion Puckett had a great pro day the other day. Maybe a guy that finds his way onto an NFL team before long. You could have lost four NFL guys out of a secondary and be more talented. I think that's a possibility. They're longer and bigger for sure at those corner positions. The nickel, you know, the safety
but
spot.
A lot of the notion of Auburn being more talented after losing those guys would involve guys taking a step.
Like, correct. Now, it's not the experience. It's not as though, you may not be better players.
I was going to say, I don't know if Auburn traded the defensive backs who were graduating and going to the NFL. I don't know if they traded those guys for better players in.
Yeah, no. More talented. That is not. Yeah, those are two separate things. I think more talented does not necessarily mean you're better in day one than they were.
No, not yet.
I would think that, I mean, on top of, we don't know the whole story, but we don't know if there was anything else going on, but I would think that J.D. Rim going into the portal, at least in part influenced by how much talent Auburn has standing in front of him, sort of block. Like, if he had a path to playing time, I wonder if he would have hesitated.
He did not have a path to playing time, and there was not an option.
And that's a guy who played as a true freshman, was able to get on the field.
Played as a true freshman, had issues off the field last year. I think there were some things that they said, hey, we need to get straight, and I don't think they were satisfied with those things.
But they like what they have.
Correct.
There's no question about that.
Look outside, and you know, obviously you go Keontae Scott and Kay and Lee are two guys that have played. Keontae's played a ton. You look at Jaron Thompson coming in, and you've got Caleb Wooden that has played a bunch, and then you start throwing out all these second year guys. Champ Anthony's a second year junior college guy.
Yeah, he's a more experienced, a little more mature second year guy.
But then you look at the Colton Hoods and J.C. Hart and Tyler Scott and Terrence Love, Sylvester Smith.
Yep.
And that's a really impressive group of second year defensive
backs. You
mentioned
Antonio Kite
that transfers in. I mean, there's a bunch of those guys.
There are a lot of them.
And then Jalen Crawford coming in as a true freshman. He's long and can run. That group is intriguing. I still think the one question for me is interior defensive line. When I think about everything else, I think they're in a pretty good position. Can they find somebody to step up on the interior defensive line? I think this offensive line group has a chance to be continued. I thought they took strides last year. I think they can take strides this year.
It just seems like it's been a while since Auburn, especially at tackle. And I know you got to be careful, but Percy Lewis seems to have real bona fides as an SEC starting tackle.
He's got experience. Has done it.
And then Tuttle gained a lot of valuable experience last year. And Thornton.
And then you have a Tyler Johnson. You know, you have a couple of newcomers. You know, one junior college, one high school. You start going to go from a physical standpoint, you have five guys, you go, that's what an SEC offensive tackle is supposed to look like. And they might not have had five of those guys in the last 5 years combined. And they got five on one team. And Dylan Wade moves inside the guard. obviously, you look at Connor Lue and Jeremiah Wright. EJ's coming on. EJ Harris, Auburn High. Braden Joyner, Auburn High, is coming on and playing better. They're building quality depth on an offensive line group. The wide receiver position is probably the most different one. And I think Robert Lewis coming in, Sam Jackson coming in, has been great. The veteran presence, even though Sam hasn't been a wide receiver. And there's no question that Cam Coleman has come in and said, everybody's had to go, I better step up my game.
I mean, the thing, and Camden Brown looks like he has.
And I think that's come from that. Yesterday,
I mean, we're only there for 15 minutes. I was a little disappointed because I wanted to see the secondary, and I thought, well, when they line up and go against each other, I would. But, I mean, you see Cam just, while we're out there, just, you know, make sort of a nonchalant one hand
behind the back
catch yesterday on really the only pass that didn't look almost perfect from Peyton Thorne.
Yeah. No, those are things he can do. Camden Brown is a guy that has that ability. I think for him it's just been a matter of, okay, go get it, and he hasn't gone and done that. He is a much better athlete than people give him credit for, and he's a big body.
Yeah, he is.
I think it's an intriguing group. Obviously, running back group's there, and the quarterback is – I mean, Peyton Thorne, the word that comes to mind for me is process. He can, because of his experience, because he's played so much, and because he's older, it's easier for him to process things than it is for these other guys because he's done it so much.
And, you know, the other thing we keep hearing is how much work he's put in here in the offseason since the bowl game.
Yeah. We talked about it last week. The thing that you forget is that he wasn't on campus last spring. He didn't come in until the summer. And you know, still was able to do what he was able to do, but everything about the offense was off from the system itself, his play, lack of play at wide receivers. There was lots of things that went into it. Can it come together, and is he going to be the guy? I'd still make him the favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I think Hank Brown is a guy that just continues to do the right things. It's not flashy. It's Brock Purdy-esque. A little bit, where you go, man, he ain't going to blow you away with arm strength. He's not going to blow you away with athletic ability. He can't run a 4.4. All he does is kind of get the ball to the right people. And that's a pretty good spot to be in. I think he's a guy that's probably been maybe the most consistent guy outside of Peyton Thorne.
Yeah, I was wondering yesterday about the quarterback battle. I have not been able to go to the practice windows because we're doing the show during those windows. One of us needs to be here, and Bill's tracking the depth chart. Bill Cameron depth chart.
Well, I mean, we're sort of balancing.
That's
since,
true, and I do miss.
You're doing basketball I hope you get to keep doing.
Yeah, I have missed like half the shows the last couple of months.
Where y'all? Where are y'all?
We're
in North Carolina A&T,
Greensboro on Friday night.
For
A&T, round of 16.
Okay.
In the WNIT, and then there's an all Sunbelt matchup on the other side of the bracket. So if Troy wins, it could be either Southern Miss or ULM waiting for them in the round of eight to get to the so almost assured North Carolina A&T could win two games. Almost assured there will be a Sunbelt team in the final four of the WNIT this year. It's just a matter of who is it going to be. ULM has multiple Auburn transfers that reunited with their former. Reunited with their former JUCO coach, Missy Bilderback, who went from Jones to ULM. John Hartwell hired her. Speaking of familiar names, there at this, you know, former Troy AD and a guy who was an outspoken proponent of getting the job when Auburn was looking for an AD a couple of years ago.
So you were talking about your thoughts on quarterback.
Yeah, it's so I'm thinking, Jason, that I mean it doesn't it would be a pretty remarkable development. If Peyton Thorne lost the QB1 job to one of the current guys, it'd be a pretty remarkable development if somebody came in from the outside and beat out Peyton Thorne to be QB1 right now too, because that doesn't appear to be an option as far as we can tell.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be an option.
No, doesn't seem like that's in the plans whatsoever. I'm wondering. I mean, Hank Brown has had the most buzz of any of the other guys, especially since the bowl game. Would you think he has a leg up now on the backup job compared to Holden or the freshman Walker?
I think the goal for one of the other three guys was to try to establish yourself in a pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
That because that's all that's going to happen between now and August let's go August 21st. I mean, or whatever it is. I mean, it's going to be in before they that the battle's done. It's going to be in August. It's not going to happen now. Can you make that move and go, hey, I deserve more of those reps when we get back on the field? He's helping himself do that, I think, this spring. Long way to go, and there's still a scrimmage coming up Saturday, which this Saturday
this may be the biggest of the spring.
Correct, maybe the biggest day of the spring.
And this quarterback battle isn't just to be the number two going into the season. The number two going into the season will be first man up if something happens to Peyton Thorne, right? I mean, the first guy, if Peyton falters or if Peyton gets hurt, I mean, there are paths to playing time. You know, yeah. Things happen during a college football season.
You would expect at some point that person takes a significant snap in a season. That's just that's the way of life in the Southeastern Conference.
It's easier to discount the true freshman just because he's a true freshman, which Hank and Holden.
I think so. The question is, what's it look like when they put the pads up in a week and a half? How close? And then, okay, digest for the summer, and then that first week and a half, 2 weeks of the fall, because then you go, okay, who has helped themselves the most since we were practicing? Because I think, like I said, that's why I think it's pecking order and not, hey, here's the lineup.
Do you think it could still be Holden, or does it feel like it's trending away from him right now?
I think he's still there. Okay. But I think...
Because I wonder if we're just asking more about Hank Brown, or if it's because we're hearing things about Hank Brown that sort of lend us to...
Well, yeah, sometimes it depends on who's asking the questions. Correct. And what questions are being asked. But while we've been out there, Hank has just looked good, at least to our eyes,
I think for them... they saw Holden, even though it's a different offense. He was a guy that especially the second half of the year last year, got a significant part of the snaps as the backup guy. Hank Brown was running scout team, got thrown in a bowl game. I think for them, I said it earlier, and maybe it's not the case, but I thought Holden really needed to come out and go, hey, I am head and shoulders better than those guys. Early on, he needed to do that, because I think if you're a coach, you go, well, that guy hasn't had very many reps. This guy hasn't had any at all. And if it's close, do you lean towards the two guys who haven't had that opportunity yet?
And Holden could be facing a first 3 years in college football without any real playing time, which is a tough way to begin. If your career is going to end with you on the field.
It is 25 years ago, that was what quarterback was.
Yeah.
It's not that way anymore. Now, I take that back. It's still that way, but it's usually not that way at one school. Now, you may go, hey, I'm going to go look at another spot, and you might not be the guy there either. Depends on what you pick and the need area, those kind of things.
I feel like D1 programs that are going to be looking for quarterbacks from now until the start of the season are going to want guys with a track record on the field.
That's the hard part of it is if you're 18, we just talked about basketball. Look at basketball, how valuable experience is, even if it's someone who, well, that guy may not be as physically talented as somebody I can get. How a quarterback, it may be the most important tool for anybody at that level to go, hey, this guy has played a lot of football, because you got to learn it. You got to jump in there real quick, especially after a spring. You're right. If you're saying, hey, we absolutely got to have our starting quarterback, it's going to probably be somebody that's played a lot of football somewhere.
We'll get to our final break. Love for you to join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
It's time. 1-390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final couple of minutes here of hour number one, and Jerry is on the phone. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Couple of quick questions. Yeah. The new guy coming in for basketball, Pettiford?
Yes.
What is he? Is he a point guard or a shooting guard?
Both.
Yes.
he is both. He is a lefty. A little bit longer. He's 6'1", 175, 180. Can really jump, really explosive, long arms. I would say lean more towards a two than a point, but he's a guy that can do both those
things. He's probably played more point, though, than
yes.
Aiden had this year coming in.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Another question. I was reading the baseball scores the other day, and did I count it right? Are there six SEC teams in the top 10?
Top 10, yeah. In most polls, I've seen seven. So, yeah, there are 12 SEC teams in the top 25.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yep.
All right, I'll let you go.
All right, appreciate it, Jerry. Jason, we just got about a minute. Let everybody know what all's going on there at Auburn Undercover and how they can keep up with all of it.
Yeah, like I said, still lots going on. You know, kind of tracking the portal to see if anything starts to gain traction from Auburn there. Obviously, that's going to be a big part of things, probably more in the next week or two, I think, moving forward as the tournament sorts out. But got all that going on. Obviously, football recruiting, tons of visitors. A-Day next weekend, so kind of gearing up for that for them. Baseball, softball, lots going on. So you can follow us, auburnundercover.com. Also follow me on Twitter at ITATJason.
All right, Jason, thanks a lot. Have a great rest of the week.
Yeah, y'all too.
All right, we're got to get to our top of the hour break. Brett, if you can, hang on. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into The Drive, hour number two. Hopefully welcome back, but regardless, it is the second hour of the Wednesday Drive, a gorgeous Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody doing well. And the second hour of the show, as usual, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, who was with us for hour number one. Hope you got to hear Jason. If you missed any, please check out the podcast.
Podcast of The Drive, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. It's all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And they also sponsor the Drive text box.
That's right, the text box, 334-564-1840, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Shout out to Derek and all our friends there at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And, of course, you can call us on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 321-1390. And let's get to the Drive hotline. And Brett's been hanging on since the end of hour number one. Hey, Brett, how you doing today?
Doing good. Out of the 15 practices, how many times can they go live, and how many times have they gone live so far?
I don't know how many full pad practices there have been, right? I mean, are we on a short list of
they,
them?
They went full pads the Tuesday, Thursday after spring break, Tuesday, Saturday last week, and that's the plan this week as well. So I would guess, yeah, five times so far they've gone in full pads. They're scrimmaging again against Saturday, and they'll do it twice again. So it looks like Auburn's going to go 7 out of the 15 in full gear. I think you can do it 10 is the max.
Yeah. So on the days that he's calling teaching days, are they still hitting, though?
They're doing some thud. I mean, they won't we wouldn't have more on than just the shells and shorts, but mostly it's walkthroughs, it's film, and then walkthroughs of things that they've been doing to make sure they understand, if they didn't do it right, what they need to do.
Okay. How about that defensive tackle? I can't remember who it was on some show, a guy who went to a practice. He wasn't an Auburn person. he said Auburn's got a lot of work to do at defensive tackle. But then on another, Locked On Auburn, I heard him say that Keys and Reed both have had real good springs. So tell me what y'all know about that.
Yeah, actually, Gage Keys was talking to the media. He talked to us the other day, and I just asked him about young guys. That's when he mentioned DJ Reed. I've heard DJ Reed has had some moments, but everything that I've heard and when I've watched, it looks like the top guys are Gage Keys and Trill Carter, probably a little ahead of Jason Jones right now. So I think Gage is somebody that they're pleased with. I don't know that they have a disruptive guy, you know, somebody who is just absolutely going to have to have two players on him to keep him away. And that's something I think that they're missing right now. And there's no question they're looking for help in the portal.
Yeah, well, last thing, are they working Jones and Trill Carter at tackle also, or just at nose guard?
Trill said he's working at both. I'm not sure if Jason's working at anything but the news this spring.
Okay. All right. Y'all have a great day.
Appreciate it, Brett. Yeah, you know, we've got a ton of audio. All coming. I've got a lot of audio that we've gotten here recently. I mean, for example, I've got Gage Keys. I've got Trill Carter. I've got Malik Blockton. When we're talking defensive front,
I kind of wanted to. Did you ever run the? Did you ever run Knicks? From last
Derek,
week.
No, I did not.
I thought Derek Nix was.
Did you get that to Drew?
I think we got that to Drew. I think there should be a
link. Yeah, we'll look and see if we can get that here in a little while.
I think people might want to hear from a new addition
from Auburn's coaching staff. One of the new members. He is the new offensive coordinator. Obviously, spent some time with Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss. He'd been at Ole Miss for a long time. I mean, this is a big deal for him to leave a place where he had been for so long.
Wasn't he like a Houston nut hire or something?
I believe he was.
Yeah,
he was there prior to Hugh coming to Ole Miss as head coach.
I think it's Houston nut because it goes. He wasn't an Orgeron hire.
No,
it goes, but that's still. I mean, we're going way. I mean, Houston, Hugh. Who was the O-line coach? Matt Luke. And now Lane.
Yes.
I mean, you last through four. Very different administrations there.
Oh, you're not kidding.
At Ole Miss. And I think he'll be – and now he reunites with Hugh Freeze. Seems to be very excited about the opportunity here at Auburn.
Yeah, so we'll let you hear some of our interviews with him the other day. But, yeah, as Jason said, I really appreciate – and I think all the media appreciates the number of players that we've been able to talk to this spring. You know, I can remember – it hadn't been very long, maybe a couple of years ago, where we'd get the same three or four players, and that would be it if we got players. I mean, we're getting different players every time, and we've got another opportunity tomorrow.
And maybe there's less concern over – I mean, I guess there would be – there are times in college football where if you're only letting a certain number of players talk or a very, very limited number of players talk to the media, that's a sign that there could be – discontent among everyone else.
You want to make sure everybody's on the same page. Yeah. You know, that was one of the things, the paranoia that, somebody might say something that the other players hadn't said.
Things might be a little dyspeptic behind the scenes if that's the case. But no, I think, first of all, in the era of the transfer portal, why are you disgruntled? If you're unhappy, you're not...
Yeah, aren't you gone?
Yeah, you're not hostage. What are you doing? You can leave. So I think that's probably improved things across the board in college football because you have fewer athletes who feel like they're stuck in a situation that they are unable to exit cleanly. But on top of that, we thought, Bill, maybe a lot of first year players last year that were getting their bearings about them as Auburn football players, a big adjustment to go from wherever they were.
Oh, it was such a change.
A lot of those guys are settling in, right? Mm-hmm. They seem more comfortable. They seem like they know what to expect this upcoming fall. And the younger guys, there's enthusiasm apparently across the board, you know, with the guys that we get to talk to about the opportunity they have this fall to build on what Hugh Freeze did in year one.
Yeah, I mean, I will right now. I said that this morning when I was talking with Wimp and Barry Sanderson. I'll be very surprised if the offense isn't markedly improved this year, just because they know exactly what they're doing. There's no, is it going to be a little of this, a little of that? Who's going to be making the decisions? I mean, I think it is. It's Hugh Freeze's offense now. It's not, well, some of Hughes, some of Phillips, and he may call some, Phillip may call. Regardless of who calls him, it's Hughes' offense.
I think there was also time, there were times last year where the offensive play calling was influenced by a lack of faith in the offensive line. Is that
agreed? Like, and the lack of confidence in wide receivers.
In wide receivers, and you sort of have to call a game.
So you got to run the ball, but you've got to run it certain ways.
And you can't call too many plays that ask your quarterback to hold the ball for a long period of time because he may
right.
get, he may and you know, receivers are struggling to get, like, there's other things. So yeah, I think there are a variety of reasons. Again, like I said, the thought of having a pair of tackles like Percy and Tuttle.
That's a good. I mean, the thing is, we'll find out how well they play. Man, that's a good looking pair of tackles.
And it's a pair of guys that Jake Thornton was on very early in their careers.
Yes,
as offensive lineman, he told the story when we got to talk with Coach Thornton, telling the story of recruiting Percy Lewis when he was a first year junior college offensive lineman, and saying, I could see that there was an SEC starter on the field then when he was trying to recruit him to Ole Miss early in his junior college career. Now he's got him here at Auburn, and then Percy Lewis is a guy that I mean, some of the facial expressions we get from players when we ask about Percy Lewis, right? When it's like, hey Jalen McLeod, like what's it like going up against somebody like Percy?
This yeah,
they way too fast to be that big.
Yeah, it's I mean, I think the offensive line, is solid. And I think, as Jason said, and you got, you know, y'all were talking about it a little while ago, I believe it is deep as well. You know, we haven't. I'm blanking on the junior college offensive lineman. I had my depth chart, by the way, I need to find it.
Has it not been updated recently?
No, I've updated it, but look, it's all by hand.
Okay.
Seth Wilfred. I was blanking on him because. Couple of the folks that I was talking to said he's looked very good as well. So, I mean, Auburn's got, you know, third guys at a couple of positions there on the offensive line that I think they feel pretty good about. So there are reasons to expect the offense, the improvement at receiver, the solidification there of the offensive line, second year with Peyton Thorne and a spring for Peyton. I think just that along with knowing exactly what the offense is going to be, you got all your running backs back, and you got your tight ends back. There's no reason for the offense not to be noticeably better this year.
It would be a disappointment because
absolutely.
I think bringing back, granted, a starting quarterback who struggled at times last year, bringing back a quarterback who's able to spend an entire offseason as QB1 with continuity at certain spots and upgrades at other spots. Yeah, I mean, there's a belief that, I mean, we see places take a jump in year two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what kind of jump the whole team can make because there are some great teams on the schedule.
Sure,
but I think offensively, I think that an upgrade from year one to year two would be. I think if there's not one, it damages sort of like these are the pillars of a Hugh Freeze program, mm-hmm. right? And if the offense struggles for a second year with hand-picked players that Hugh Freeze brought in, if they're struggling to make big plays in year two, it could stunt some of that. You know,
sure. Then you can wonder: is everything on track the way it's supposed to be? So, yeah, this is a very, very important year to see that progression. And if you don't, then sure.
Oh, year two
concerns.
Year two is so. I mean, you could just think about the big hires in the SEC over the last 5-10 years, and think about how important year two was for all of them. Because if you come out of year two looking weak, you're going to have programs thinking, how much more time do we give this? Is he going to be able to recruit his way out of it? Billy Napier would be an example of that. Oh, right? Yeah. Underachieving year two, and suddenly Billy Napier is, I mean.
Oh, that seat is hot. That seat is really, really hot.
And how many games does he get if Florida comes out? Because that's the other thing, is the way the timeline has changed, you can't wait until the middle of November to decide if your head coach is coming back in college football. Like, you need to know early. You need to hit the ground running when it's time to go search for a coach. And you need to have everything lined up by the time players go into the portal. So, I mean, you can see where a bad year two puts you, all the graphs start to go down. And that's what Hugh Freeze is. I think he's taken steps to avoid that, and we'll see what it looks like this fall.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Well, I had to jump into this conversation. You were talking about the line and the prospects for the team this fall, and my belief is that if you want to be a team that plays for conference championships or be a participant at least in the national championship, you've got to have a presence on the offense and defensive line that can at least hold its own with everybody else on your schedule. And after that, the rest of your guys, you know, they kick in and they'll maybe make it or not, but their performance will be so much better if they can work off of that good foundation of a good line of scrimmage. And so I'm just thinking that back to Hugh Freeze and the fact that he resisted the idea to go get another quarterback. I look at offense as two parts. There's the quarterback, and then there's the other 10 people. And so if the other 10 people can really do something, you can put an ordinary guy in there who knows the basics of being a quarterback, and he'll be effective and look pretty good. But a great quarterback will really struggle behind the other 10 people if they're missing parts and it's just sort of so-so, you know. And so that's kind of the way I look at the way Auburn will do is how well they can establish that line of scrimmage, because I think they have the other people.
Well, I think they have added pieces there at wide receiver. We talked about Robert Lewis sort of being the guy that everyone looks to as one of the leaders. He knows exactly what to do. And Sam Jackson has come in and shown tremendous athleticism. Cam Coleman, of course, is just he is a very, very special kind of freshman. He doesn't look or play like a freshman. So they've improved the receiver room, and they're still waiting for two of their top signees, Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons, will be in here in the summer. So the receiving room is better. The offensive line's better. Yeah, it should bode well for marked improvement there on the offensive line. Appreciate the call, Yellowhammer. We will get to our first break here of hour number two. When we come back, we'll let you hear some of the comments from Auburn's new offensive coordinator, Derek Nix. Love for you to join in as well, 334-321-1390, here on the Wednesday Drive.
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, our thanks to Jason Caldwell for being with us in hour number one. We're a day away from more NCAA basketball as the Sweet 16 will get underway. Two SEC teams still alive. It's one of the more higher ranked Sweet 16s.
Chalkier.
Yeah, absolutely. Because all four ones, all four twos, two threes, two fours, two fives, a six, and an 11.
In fact, 13 of the top 14 in KenPom. Have advanced
14 of the top 16.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like 13 of the top 14, and sadly, the one that is not there is Auburn.
But
how many times have all four ones and all four twos been in the Sweet 16?
It feels
lately?
Rare. It feels rare. We were talking about that leading up to the bracket, that it's understandable to predict that in your bracket, but often you don't get all eight of the top eight seeds on the board. The four ones and the four twos all surviving past the first weekend. How about this, Bill? I don't think they'll all survive into the Elite Eight. I think a one or
no,
a two.
No, you don't think it'll just be ones and twos?
I don't think we're going to get one versus two in all four Elite Eight rounds. We could.
Yeah.
And boy, does the committee look smart, right?
Oh, you're not kidding if that were the case. I mean, they look pretty smart right now. They really do.
I mean, I think they made some questionable decisions at the bubble. But yeah. For the most part, the tournament, I thought that the first 4 days of the tournament went really, really well.
All right. So let's look at them. All right, tomorrow, you've got UConn and San Diego State on TBS. That is a 6:39
now that
start.
That's a game where I think the one seed has a pretty good shot. I mean,
that's a rematch of last year's national championship game.
I believe the largest point spread of any game in the Sweet 16 is the 11 points that UConn is favored by against San Diego State in that game.
And then that's followed by the West. That's followed by the Illinois Iowa State 2-3 matchup.
Basically, a pick 'em on the board, and that's going to be a really, really good basketball game.
Yeah, the other games. It's the left side of the bracket playing tomorrow night, as you have the North Carolina Alabama 1-4 matchup that'll be at around 8:30 tomorrow night.
I think Alabama has more,
I think they've got
than,
they've got a very, a, very good shot.
More than a puncher's yep. chance tomorrow night against the North Carolina Tar Heels, even though Carolina as a one seed has played well in the first two rounds of this tournament.
I like Arizona over Clemson. That's the 2-6. That's the earlier game on the West.
I've been wrong about Clemson twice already. I had New Mexico and Baylor beating them.
I know. This is the thing. Arizona's won a couple of games. When they win a couple of games, they usually win a game or two more.
That should be an Arizona home game too.
Yeah.
I mean, not that there aren't Clemson fans everywhere, but in Los Angeles, I think that's going to be
that should be
something of an Arizona home game, and so they tend to pack out when they play big games.
All right. So you like is Alabama.
I'm going to go chalk in Alabama. So give me tomorrow night, I'll take.
So you got Iowa State?
I got Iowa State, UConn, and I got North Carolina. I got Bama and Arizona winning the four games tomorrow night.
All right. And like I told the Sandersons this morning, they said, how many people down there are going to be pulling for the SEC team? And I said, probably not too many.
No, I think there's going to be a lot of people.
A lot of Carolina Blue.
Suddenly discovering how much they love the North Carolina Tar Heels. Tomorrow night when they're the team keeping Alabama from the Elite Eight.
Yeah. Because that's one of the things Auburn still has one thing that without question over Alabama. Alabama's never made it to the Final Four. And you can't make it to the Final Four if you don't win in the Sweet 60.
And what a boost for what Nate Oates is doing if he can mount a tournament run. And there's Mark Sears who's a
we've been talking about Janiah Broome coming back for Auburn. Mark Sears could be back at Alabama. And people go, no, forget that. He's been there forever. No, he's got another year, too, because of COVID. And do you think Mark Sears is a guy that's going to be a lottery pick or a high first-round draft pick for the NBA?
Just like Janiah Broome, he's the kind of great
College player.
Great college basketball player who might be more valuable to his current school than he is to any team in the NBA.
And they seem to have found NIL money recently. Do they not? I mean, really seems like
they're paying the head coach about $7 million less in football, right? That helps.
He's getting paid pretty good.
Yeah, but they get a little discount, right? Compared to
I don't know. I thought he's like the third highest paid coach in college football.
For some reason, I thought Saban was making like substantially more.
Saban was making about 11. I think. Well, maybe, I think DeBoer's making like 10 something.
Maybe they didn't get too much of a discount. Yeah, then. Maybe that's not where the money's.
That's
going
inflation too. but yeah. So that is something to. To think about, it's like gracious. If Mark Sears comes back at Alabama, they've already got, as Jason said, they've added another shooting guard in the portal already. So but fun games. They get started tomorrow night with those four games. Then you have four more on Friday night as we head toward the Final Four. Did we get the audio? I mean, we're going to get to it after the bottom of the hour. I said we'd let you hear some of the comments from New Auburn offensive coordinator Derek Nix, And we'll do that. We'll do that a little after the bottom of the hour. Again, would love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports wise, though? We mentioned Auburn with a big.
What about the Friday games? You feel strong because I'm not going to be here in the next 2 days.
Oh, that's true.
We got a remote, by the way. Don't forget to tell.
Nobody's mentioned it to me. I happen to hear a commercial for it, so it's like, oh, that's good to know. We're gonna be on location at Fairway Auto Brokers. At least that's what I hear. So I'm going to head there and hope that that's the plan. I think Don's gonna join me as well. So, yeah, that's coming up on Friday, I believe, on the line. And the drive will be there at Fairway Auto Brokers. Across from John Deere out on I guess that's still just Glenn.
Yeah, no, they got live on location at Bent Creek, I believe, is the Bent Creek location where we're going to be looking forward to this one.
Yep. You mentioned the Friday night games. All right, you've got on the right side of the bracket, it's a 1-5 matchup with Purdue and Gonzaga. I don't think a lot of people had Gonzaga this deep. Okay, there were quite a few people that didn't have Purdue this deep. But
that region, though, with Gonzaga and Kansas, felt like those are two teams people have been very skeptical of all season long, and it was just a matter of who was going to be able to outlast the others. And Gonzaga just obliterated Kansas.
Yes, they did to
get to this round, and we'll see what they can do. We'll see what they can do in a battle against one of the top teams in the draw.
To me, the one I'm really looking forward to is the 2-3 matchup, Creighton and Tennessee.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it's amazing to think that this is the first ever Houston versus Duke game in men's basketball. When you think about the history of those two programs, that they've never played before in basketball.
You're right. I didn't realize that
we're getting the first ever game between the Houston and Duke. You had one or the other in the Final Four for about 10 years, right?
It was
either had one or the other. So instead, they're facing each other in the Sweet 16. I think that all four of the games on Friday. They are all winnable by the. I mean,
even NC State over Marquette?
I keep picking against NC State, and here they are.
They were 11. That's why. I mean, they were playing.
NC State and Clemson are both teams where you came in feeling pretty. You're I think most people were pretty cold on the ACC outside of Duke and Carolina, and after Virginia played like they did in the play-in game, that was only that was only strengthened that belief from some people. But here's NC State. And Clemson, just cruising through the tournament so far. We'll see what they can do. Step up in competition for both. When they got Clemson's got Arizona, and NC State's got Marquette. But if they can last one more round.
Oh, you're right though. I mean, I heard so many people going, "Oh, the ACC is a joke. They're not the third best conference this year." And here you've got, of course, you've got Carolina and Duke, but you got NC State and Clemson as well.
And Creighton, Tennessee is appointment viewing. Like that's a Final Four caliber game. That's a national championship caliber game. Even like those two teams are playing so well. And yeah, I think Tennessee's got a little bit more, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see what Creighton can do against they're one of the teams that beat UConn this year. I mean, Creighton's got real firepower.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break.
Including
Trey Alexander.
Including Trey
Alexander. Yeah, no kidding. You had to remind me and Auburn fans of that. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Derek Nix spent some time with the media the other day, and we'll let you hear that when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 25 minutes or so here on this Wednesday. And as we've been talking about for most of this hour, we're going to let you hear some of the interview that the media had with Auburn's new offensive coordinator, Derek Nix.
And with Coach Kiffin, like I've been with him and know him, is not a shock at all.
I see that guy in real life, like kind of a jokester.
He's serious a ton of the time, but you can get in some lighter moments. But he's been really good to me my 4 years while I was there, and so I wouldn't change it.
Did you feel like you're in between, like a fight between him and Hugh? Because they both wanted you, and they both.
Well, not a fight per se. is really it came down to me personally, to me, what I thought was really the best for me in my career. And, man, I had a lot of great times there at Ole Miss. Been there for nearly two decades, 16 years, and a lot of great players. They're responsible for me having success, and a lot of great people in that community there. So it wasn't anything I took lightly. It was just basically boiled down to me and saying, you know what, if you want to have a chance to go move up, why not go do what Coach Freeze got you already familiar with, a guy that you already know what the expectations are, a guy that you know what kind of culture's already set, a guy that believes in you, why not go now?
What is it about Coach Freeze that makes him a good guy to work with?
I think, number one, he's a believer. I'm a believer, too, and I think he tried to set the culture that way first. I think, number two, that he makes it family first around here. It's a family atmosphere. I know my wife, I know my kids can be around. I know what type of temperature is set. I guess that's probably what stuck in my mind. I think he's a guy that you can go to and talk to, good or bad. He's heard them both. And I think he has high expectations on and off the field on how you carry yourself, how we prepare to go win, how we prepare these guys for life. And that's really mirrors up to how I think as well.
Coach, coming in, you know, to fill the shoes of somebody who's so beloved by this university, a guy that you played high school football with in Cadillac, how do you balance, you know, trying to honor that and then but doing things your way too?
First, I try to do a great job understanding I can only be me. Carnell, obviously, was a heck of a football player. He's done a great job as a coach in a short time already. The thing I had to look at myself and say, hey, I can't be Carnell Williams, but I can be the very best version of Derrick Nix and come in and go back to my foundational beliefs as a person, number one, number two, as a coach, and try to do a great job of implementing that with our coaching staff, number one, and back down to our players.
Have you guys, did he reach out after you took the job?
Oh, he did. You know, me and him talked the year before when this was coming up, and obviously we talked since the change after this past season. You know, we wish me luck, and I wish him luck on his endeavors, and so it's been good.
You still have a relationship with Lane, with Coach Kiffin?
I do. I actually saw him. We had spring break, and we went back to worship service at church and saw him and still had a cordial conversation.
You took your daughter, I think, to the basketball game, right? And you talked a little bit about, you know, just being this family atmosphere. Did she, you know, say anything about that moment and, you know, being in a new place for the first time?
Yeah, I was actually trying to win her over. she's been born in Oxford, Mississippi. So all she has known is red and blue and Ole Miss and learning to live and die with those games on the weekends and going to camps and all that. And so it was one of my deals. You know, I said, hey, you know, I'm going to get announced on the game. I'm going to walk up there with me. And so I was trying to get her to, you know, to feel it, you know, being in Auburn and everything like that. But it'll be something she hadn't talked about yet, but I know she will in the future.
How old is she?
She's seven.
She'll be all right.
She'll be all right. Yeah,
she's got time. She'll be all right. All right. Derek, I mean, I know you're only about halfway through spring practice, but what are you seeing so far from the offense? What are your feelings about what you've got to work with?
I'm going to tell you, but even before we started practice, I felt like I saw a group of guys that were hungry, a group of guys that were eager. They were ready to roll up the sleeves and go to work. I mean, I'm going in there watching them and strength and conditioning and nobody complains. You know, they say bark out the instruction of what they got to do, and I just saw guys working. And so far through our, you know, couple of weeks of practice, man, I just see guys trying to strain and trying to buy in and do it the way we want to do it right now. And my main focus right now as a group, you know, is just, you know, being a fundamentally efficient scoring machine. And what does that mean? You know, doing a great job of taking care of the football, learning how to play with great energy, play with great effort, making sure that we got, you know, great note takers in the meeting room. Doing a great job of making sure that with the small details, we get those down. And to me, if we can learn how to play hard, if we can learn how to play with juice and effort when we step between those white lines, I think all the other things will fall in place. So that's kind of been the emphasis so far.
Derek, this obviously is a different day in your game in college football How's that impacted what you do as a coach? Probably the NIL and the ability of people just to walk out the door anytime they get ready and go somewhere else?
It's required us to constantly be able to adjust, to constantly eval your roster, constantly, you know, do a great job of recruiting, making sure we, you know, make really, really educated decisions on who the guys we end up signing. You're always looking ahead. You know, we got to have a great staff in our recruiting department that does a great job of helping us, you know, seeing guys that are available and just keeping us up to speed with our roster compared to what we need going on in the future.
Do you have to talk to your players differently now than maybe when you were playing?
I don't know if you had to talk to them any differently. I think you have to be more aware. I think there's more one-on-one meetings. I think there's a lot more one-on-one time that you have to account for now compared to back then.
Is that part of like making them feel like they're getting individual instruction from you?
I think individual instruction, and it's letting them know too that, you know, even though you still have to recruit, our main focus is the guys we have here and making sure they get every ounce of attention that we can give them to make them the very best person and player that they can be.
Do you sometimes think you just came on 20 years too early?
For the NIL, definitely. For the NIL, definitely. My old college coach, Jeff Bauer, joked with me. He said, D, you know, if this NIL would have been around, you probably wouldn't have been a Golden Eagle.
You've gone from one program, Ole Miss is almost all portal. I mean, Lane Kiffin loves the portal. Now you're working for a guy who loves high school recruiting and doesn't really looks at the portal both skeptically.
Right.
Has that been a big adjustment for you?
It has been. It has been. And one of my welcomes, but you're right, two really different approaches. I think at Ole Miss, we still would try to go after the top high school kid, but understood that there was another guy in the portal that maybe the margin for error for making mistakes may be a little less. You've seen them go against top competition already. They may be a little bit more mature compared to here. Still going after the top guys in high school and, you know, looking at what Coach Freeze and the staff did last year. They did a great job of landing those guys. So I think it's two different philosophies. It is a little bit different, but I think both work.
Coach, when talking about the timing of accepting his job, you know, what made it this time like the right time to?
Yeah, talking about that earlier, you know, I think always I'm a believer. I think it was a God thing, and I think it was just the right timing for me and my family. I got a chance in my mind to kind of accomplish and finish the things I want to do there at Ole Miss. And if you know Coach Freeze, like I know him, he's a great recruiter too. And just thought the timing was right.
As an offensive coordinator with a head coach who is definitely going to be involved, to go into a situation like that when you know who you and how he operates, did that make it a little easier for you to?
It definitely did. I welcomed it because obviously I'm in a position where I'm learning on the run as we go, and it's been very fun for me to be to do that, but to be with not only, you know, Coach Freeze, but being with Ken Austin, the guy I work with that's coordinated at a high level, a guy that's been a head coach, even one of our analysts, Maurice Harris, he's been a coordinator. I just looked at it and I'm saying, well, I got Coach Freeze here, I got Ken Austin here, I got Maurice here. Man, I got all kind of help around me to help develop me to be the very best I can be. Guys I can lean on for opinions and figure out the best way to get things done.
Kent has a reputation of being a really top-notch quarterback coach. You've worked with him before, and now you work with him here. What is it that makes him special?
First of all, probably Kent also got an IQ out of this world. He's very smart and intelligent, but with that intelligence, he does a great job being able to break it down so our players can understand it. He just sees the game differently. I think he's really great with seeing coverages and really, he's been a guy, you know, since 08 that I've known. He's had success everywhere with offense.
I mean, he played football at a very high level.
He did.
And he was really good. Do you think that matters? I think that's a big part of why he's so good.
I'm sure it helps. I know it's been a lot of time coaches who haven't even played the game have had a lot of success. But with him being on that high of a level, having success he did, I know it's got to be a big help for him.
Is he humble about it? I mean, does he know how good he was?
He is. I can't rarely ever talk about his playing career. Rarely ever. So he is a humble guy. And to me, he's been here to help. He's one of the guys I kind of reached out to before I took this job and just kind of pick his brain and see what he thought was. And man, he was, you know, all about it, excited. And so, again, that made me a little bit easier to go take the job.
Have you talked with Hugh or Coach Freeze about how it's going to work in the fall, about calling plays and who's running the scripts and all that kind of stuff?
Right now, you're looking at the guy right now. And to me, I think it's done collectively by the staff. And we're going to do whatever gives us the best chance to go here.
Coach, what do you want Auburn fans to know about your office approach this year?
Yes, sir. Just 11 guys on the field, they're going to play extremely hard. We're going to be fun to watch. We're going to play fast. We're going to be fearless. We're going to be physical. You know, we're going to emphasize taking care of the ball. I want these guys, you know, continue to train to finish and just do whatever it takes to go get a W on Saturday.
From your perspective, what are you best at in recruiting? Is it a particular position? Is it an area of the country? What do you think you bring on that part?
Besides the position or area, I think when I get a chance to get one-on-one with kids, when they get a chance to see my heart, they get a chance to see what I'm about, not only just the football, but their spiritual life, their academic life, their personal life. I think kids and parents get a chance to gravitate to that because I think that's mostly what they all want, and that's naturally who I am. I think in recruiting, I just get a chance to be me and not a great guy just over the phone, not just a great guy, you know, just doing a FaceTime, but we get a chance to get one-on-one and talk. They get a chance to interact with me. They get a chance to watch practice. They get a chance to see how I interact with my guys and what I demand. That is what I think I bring to the table as a recruiter.
Do you think of yourself as a closer? A guy can go out and finish one off?
I've been known to be able to get that done.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to pat myself on the back and say I can do that. I think the times that we signed or I've been a part of signing the top guys in the country is because it's been done by a collective group, whether it be a great head coach that can recruit, whether it be that third guy, whether it be that off-the-field guy, whether it be the other position coach, one guy that's around it. And our best selling point has always been our players. You know, when they can go in there and talk to some of the guys that's actually been in that foxhole with us, seeing how these coaches respond after a win, see how these coaches respond after a loss, see how these coaches respond during the week. You know that these coaches just treat us like employees. We're going to see them between the hours of, you know, work time or are they at our house or around our families. I think our players are our biggest sales pitch.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
That is Derek Nix, who spent some time with the media. Some good stuff there. You can tell he's excited. 16 years at Ole Miss for the Southern Miss grad. He'd been there through, as Dan said, multiple head coaches.
What was that that line where he was asked about?
Asked about the play call. Yeah. He said, who's going to be the play caller? He said, you're looking at him. So that will be really interesting. Is Derek Nix indeed the play caller this year? We do know it's going to, I mean, you know, it's the offense that Hugh Freeze is going to want, but it'll be interesting to see how that does work. We'll get to our final break here of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in on the Wednesday Drive.
Toyota of Sylacauga has you covered with exclusive VIP direct pricing. Enjoy incredible savings.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here on this Wednesday afternoon. Our final segment this week with Dan as the Troy women heading up to North Carolina, to Greensboro, right?
That's right. We got the WNIT taking on the Aggies of North Carolina A&T in the round of 16 in the WNIT. First ever postseason win for Troy on Monday night.
I heard you say that the other day, I guess, when you were talking with Doug or something. I heard you mention that. I did not realize that. Yeah. So that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, they'd never won an NCAA tournament game or a WNIT game before. You know, they've won conference tournament games, but nothing after the conference tournament. And so, yeah, Rigby picking that up. And there's going to be a banner. There's a banner for the two previous WNIT appearances for Troy. The question is now, Bill, what is that banner going to say? right? Troy's right. got one win in this thing, and they're headed up to North Carolina A&T, who won at the buzzer over the weekend to get this far. So it should be a lot of fun tomorrow night.
Yeah, I was
Friday night.
I was wondering. I mean, when I saw the score of the Troy game, I thought, well, surely you'd be getting to host again, but.
You know, so I'm under the impression, and I actually talked to some folks who've been around women's college basketball for a while. I think a lot of it has to do with attendance.
Yes,
and
Troy had
excellent attendance for the first game, but there wasn't an empty seat at North Carolina A&T.
Wow.
The footage from North Carolina, and now it's a small gym, mm-hmm. Probably 3,000 to 4,000 seat. Basketball arena on the North Carolina A&T campus, but it did not look to be there didn't look to be an empty. It looked like a 4,000 seat version of Cameron Indoor for a big
yeah, well, game. That's great. That's what they want. They want a great as good an atmosphere as you can have, and possibly.
When I saw that atmosphere, I thought as much optimism as there was with Troy, it might be tough to turn that down, and so North Carolina A&T, and that game was on a weeknight, I believe, and so now North Carolina A&T is going to get to host on
Friday.
They got a Friday night game, and Troy probably would have had a pretty healthy crowd at Troy if they'd gotten to host this, but instead going to go try to play spoiler on the road.
And as you said, the winner is going to play another Sun Belt Conference team.
Yeah,
right?
the Southern Miss and ULM on the other side of the bracket going to play either tonight or tomorrow for that to decide the other team in our pod in the round of which would be the round of eight. But we'll see if Troy can get past this one. They're taking it one game at a time. Troy looked really really sharp on Monday night in the win over FIU, and we'll see what happens. Tournament basketball.
Well, and then we talked about the Sweet 16 for the men getting underway tomorrow. You know what else starts tomorrow? It is Major League Baseball.
That's right, opening day.
Opening day. Even though there have been two games played in Korea between the Dodgers and the Padres, tomorrow. It's just about everybody. It may be everybody in action tomorrow. Haven't looked to see if it's a completely full schedule, but I see there are tons of games on tap for tomorrow. I love opening day Major League Baseball.
We already have a couple of postponements, unfortunately.
Yes, up in the Northeast,
including yep. Braves Phillies,
Phillies, the Mets game. I mean, a lot of rain. Up in the Northeast,
I think those are the only two. I mean, the Angels are supposed to play in Baltimore, but there aren't too many games that could be impacted by weather up in the Northeast. And we speaking of the Braves Phillies, we will have on Saturday we will have Braves Phillies here on ESPN 106.7, and tomorrow I believe as soon as our show ends tomorrow, we're going to switch over to ESPN Radio's coverage of Cubs Rangers. So the World Series champion. Texas Rangers.
Yeah, we'll be doing that. Meanwhile, over on Wings 94.3, it's a Thursday through Saturday baseball series because of Easter this week in Auburn at Texas A&M. We'll preview that and more tomorrow. Don Dunn will be in. Justin Ferguson said he'd be able to stop by, too. We've got player interviews tomorrow over on campus. Dan, have a good trip and good luck.
Appreciate it, guys. I will see you on Monday.
That's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of The Drive. We're back with you tomorrow at 4. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.